This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. And do we have some automotive information for you today? You just can't wait to hear this one. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris sounds like this.
Hi, guys. How is everybody doing today? How are you, Jack? I can't hear from everybody else.
I am fine. And yeah, it's good. We really can't. No matter how loud they shout, we won't be able to hear them. But hopefully we can hear each other. Chris is in Maine. I'm in Southern California. We are doing America on the Road cross country as we normally do. You're headed into fall there in Maine, I imagine.
Bright orange everywhere. It's beautiful. I do have to say it turned a lot more quickly this year than I remembered in years past, but I also haven't spent so much time at home observing things out of my window. So
yeah, there you go.
I think that's probably why things are looking
different. Do you have a lot of New Yorkers and New Jerseyites invading Maine right now, or have you been able to avoid that this year?
You know, we don't have as many. We do have a lot of people coming up to buy property here. I think people are fleeing their urban dwellings for the rustic scenery of Maine, if you will. But the typical tourist traps are quite quiet right now. So it's great for me to get out and eat some lobster and actually spend time on the coast as opposed to waiting for everyone to kind of filter out.
Yeah, got it. Oh, very cool. Our special guest is Scott Shirley. He is a vice president of marketing operations at Nissan North America. So he has a lot to say. And Nissan is going to have an all-out product blitz over the next several months, 18 months or so. So we'll be talking to him about that and about the new Sentra. In the car review segment, we'll be taking a look at the 2021 Toyota Supra that you were driving. I'm kind of envious.
You should be. It's a great car.
Yeah, there you go. Not really built by Toyota.
But not at all.
Not at all. And I was driving the 2021 Volkswagen Atlas, which is built by Volkswagen, but in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So it's got that going for it. Before we do any of that, let's take a look at the week's top automotive stories. What do you have for us, Chris Teague?
A bombshell, I think. California's governor made an announcement within 15 years. That's by 2035, if I can get the words out. Gas-powered internal combustion vehicles will be banned from new vehicle sales in California. So he's saying that over 50% of California's greenhouse gas emissions come from transportation, 80% of smog forming pollution, and 95% of toxic diesel emissions. He's saying that the vehicles and our transportation shouldn't give our kids asthma. So we need bold action. And then, you know, there's a whole statement around this. So my question to you, Jack, or my thoughts around this are curious here. What do you think this is going to mean for the rest of the country?
Well, number one, I think it's not just political posturing. I don't think it will happen. We've seen this kind of political posturing in California before. I am a resident of California, have been for, you know, a long, long time, many, many decades, and I've seen this over and over again. We saw a big push for zero emission vehicles, and there was, additional use of zero emission vehicles, essentially electric. There's nothing else that can really be zero emission. I guess fuel cell, kind of. Fuel cells actually put out water vapor. So I'd say it's more a political statement than it is any kind of real policy statement or something that's going to come to fruition. I think cooler heads finally prevail in these things. Cooler heads certainly prevailed on the zero emissions vehicle thing, where it was determined, hey, let's not kill off the auto industry in California. Let's not prevent Californians from being mobile, because they dearly love to do that. So kind of fascinating. We're going through some wildfires out here that, you know, some people are blaming on global warming, which is then blamed on emissions from cars. The fact that a state could affect the global emissions is kind of ludicrous on the face of it, when whole countries can't really affect that. So, and whole countries are not paying any attention to it. Whole big countries like, say, China and India, for example. So that's my take on it. Chris, what do you think about this latest announcement from Governor Gavin Newsom of California?
Well, I won't go so far as to call it grandstanding, but I do think that sort of announcement without any lead up, the abruptness of that causes panic and doesn't accomplish the things that probably need to be accomplished, at least in the near term. I know that he did give the transportation leaders until July 15th of next year, so 2021, to come up with a plan to make it happen. I don't know. I think that kind of a holistic approach, the entire country, you know, we can't really seem to do anything as an entire country these days, but that's going to be the best approach. I think it's going to be really difficult to enforce if it does become codified or solidified in law. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but I do think it's good to get the topic out there, but I think this is probably the wrong way to do it. How about that?
Yeah, I think absolutely there should be discussion about climate change. There should be discussion about emissions. And I think, again, science should prevail as opposed to politics. That seems very alien to what's happening in the country overall, right? But maybe it will, and we'll just have to see. Yeah, actually, I've got another one, and it's about a technology that's actually been out there for a while, but getting more currency now. It is called near-field communication, and it is another kind of wireless communication that is in some ways like Bluetooth, like Wi-Fi, but in other ways, not like it at all. And it is being brought into the auto industry, I think, for pairing phones. And it makes pairing phones, pairing with Bluetooth, basically, or pairing with Apple CarPlay, for example, much simpler. And largely because it doesn't require logging on in the same way that logging on to Bluetooth requires. And you've certainly been through this. As we're in different cars every week, we pair our phones, many of us pair our phones via Bluetooth every week and see the either the ease or the difficulty with which that is done. Near-field communication can change that pretty radically.
Yeah, and you know, I think phone manufacturers like Apple specifically have been very reluctant to open up that technology to anything other than for things like Apple Pay when you get your phone close to the cash register to pay. So it's good that they're starting to open that up a little bit. I've seen they've been doing that or potentially be doing that to allow for like car keys and things too. But it'll be a great step if it simplifies the Bluetooth connection. I'll talk about this in the review segment, but pairing Bluetooth, especially for things like wireless Apple CarPlay, can be a real pain. And I know we do it every week, like you said. So my pain is probably a little bit more acute than many and most than yours as well. But I think anybody gets tired of typing in that code and looking at their screen and trying to negotiate the two systems. So this is a welcome step from my point of view.
Right. It generally, near-field communication works only about 4 inches away. So it's not even great for unlocking doors. If you wanted to unlock the doors for your entire household, you'd have to be of the car, for example. You'd have to be within 4 inches of the car to enable that to happen. But there's other things you can do with it. And this instant phone pairing is certainly one of them. And as you mentioned with the Apple Pay, it is certainly very secure.
Yes.
So that's a good thing.
I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we're gonna get it. And most smartphones already have it. So that part is cool, too.
Absolutely.
Another bit of news, and we'll make this quick, but GMC has announced changes on its Sierra pickup truck, and most of them revolve around trailering features. I mean, most pickup trucks, at least most Sierras, are used for towing. Over 50% of them are used for towing. So that's pretty interesting that they're devoting most of their 2021 changes to making towing better, and they have a lot of driver assist to enable that, and a jackknife. I don't get any residuals on that or any kind of royalty for that, even though it uses my name. Other systems on the new Sierra. So
I think that's neat. You know, Chevy's doing a lot of the same with its Silverado, and they also have the, just like the multi-pro tailgate that GMC offers in the Sierra, Chevy's going to offer one for the Silverado called the Multiflex. We'll offer, I think, probably the same features, up to 6 different positions and like a standing workstation, things like that. But it too will get a lot of those trailering capabilities that you speak about. So good for them.
Yeah, well, we want to make trailering easier. And, you know, as the trucks get bigger, the trailers get bigger. And So being able to tow those things and seeing where they are and all that stuff is very, very useful. Absolutely. When we come back, we'll be looking at the 2021 Toyota Supra and the 2021 Volkswagen Atlas. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you. Thanks so much for being with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you along with Chris Teague. And Chris had very rough duty driving one of the newest sports cars on the road. Pretty cool car, the 2021 Toyota Supra. Chris, tell us all about it.
Well, first of all, we should kind of get the big elephant out of the room here. So the Supra, while it has a Toyota badge on the back, the front, and several other places on the exterior of the vehicle and interior of the vehicle, I should say, the powertrain, infotainment, and much of the engineering was done by BMW in partnership with Toyota. But that's not a bad thing. It's a great driving car. So I tested the 3.0 premium trim, which is obviously a 3.0 turbocharged inline six-cylinder. It's up, I think it's 47 horsepower from 2020 to 382 horsepower and 368 pound-feet of torque. That goes to the rear wheels through an 8-speed automatic transmission with an active rear differential. So premium package gets all the luxury stuff. It does absolutely feel like a BMW inside, but again, not a bad thing. So this has heated seats, full leather, 8.8-inch touchscreen, wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. And that's where we'll come back to that in a moment. 12-speaker JBL audio, a head-up display, and all around just a very beautiful car. The lines that they've put into building this thing, that's all Toyota, and it's spectacular. I think driving it just the first couple of days pulled more kind of jerk head reactions from other people in cars than some of the more exotic vehicles that I've driven around.
You're not calling them jerks, though,
no,
right?
I mean
their heads are jerking
and when they're looking to look at me drive down the road.
Right.
Very quick car. It's very willing to break the back tires loose. You could definitely get into trouble with your right foot if you're not careful around corners, but it does have adaptive suspension that moves more, tightens up when the car is put into sport mode and so on. Brembo four-piston brakes with a beautiful Super logo on them. Very flashy, but they do stop the car very well. All around, quick car, two-seater. So for me, you know, we always talk about it, and you may make fun of me for saying how tall I am, but there's no back seat to talk about right now. So
how tall are you, Chris? Come on, put it out there.
6 feet tall, 210 pounds. I fit just fine in the Supra. I actually had to move the seat up a little bit. But from a practical standpoint, it's true I can't carry my kids in the car. But I can carry a ton of stuff in the trunk. It's got a hatchback, and without the back seat, the trunk is, it's actually enormous. It's way bigger than I thought it would be for a car as small as the Supra. And for the two seats that are in the car, there's plenty of room. The bolsters can be adjusted. The lumbar is power adjusted. So everything is as luxurious as you would expect it to be from something that was developed jointly with BMW. I think people who bought the Supra last year for 2020, which was its first year back in, 18 years or so?
A long time.
Yeah, a little bit disappointed that they didn't wait till this year to get the bump in power. But I think, you know, they're both great cars. I recommend this one all the way around. I think that it's, something that I was very sad to have to give it back to the delivery driver. So, it'll, long-term reliability, will it be as good as a Toyota would if Toyota made the whole thing? Who knows? But I think that it's definitely a willing sports car and a very fun ride.
Well, and you alluded to the wireless Apple CarPlay.
Yeah.
So let's drop the other shoe on that one.
Bringing that back to my attention. So because it's based on a BMW or based on BMW technology, it uses BMW's iDrive infotainment system. It's responsive. It's somewhat easy to use, but it is a little bit clunkier, and to be fair, Toyota's own infotainment system is clunky as well. Menus are a little bit difficult to find, especially in the vehicles in motion, so if you need to do any settings changes or, you know, select your radio station, it's probably a good idea to kind of study up on that before you get behind the wheel. But wireless Apple CarPlay is it's baffling to set up at first, and this is not a Supra exclusive issue. This is, you know, any kind of any vehicle with a wireless Apple CarPlay. So there's a menu setting that has to be selected to first pair the phone with Bluetooth. Then there's another step to activate Apple CarPlay, and there are codes to type in and match between the two devices at a couple of steps during the way during the process. And, you know, once it's connected, it seems to work fine. There's a little bit of lag between, you know, pressing a button on the screen and actually taking action with the smartphone. But I think the connection process is where people are going to get hung up. And, you know, granted, if you buy the car, you'll do it once and never have to do it again until you buy a new phone. But for me and for you and for the rest of us that change cars, these things stick out as being a real pain. And we try to mention these things to anyone who might be kind of averse to technology already. But if you're buying a 2021 Toyota Supra, you probably expected that when you picked it up. So,
yeah, well, there you go. And I think the overall bottom line for the Supra is good car last year, even better this year. So a lot to like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm right with you. I drove it at North American Car of the Year testing last year. I really enjoyed it. So I think a little more power and these other added amenities, it'd be just that much better. So gotta like that.
Yep, no complaints.
I was driving the Volkswagen Atlas. And if that name is unfamiliar to you, and it might still be unfamiliar to many people, it is their largest SUV. It's available in 2- and 3-row body styles. The 2-row Crossport we've talked about before. And it's a bit different in terms of styling. The most recent one we've driven is the 3-row. It has seating for 7 and just a really nice vehicle overall. It's one of those vehicles I think I walked up to it the first time and said, hey, I think this is a good looking vehicle and I think I'm going to like this vehicle, and darned if I didn't. I wouldn't say exactly love at first sight, but certainly like at first sight. And there was nothing about it that ever put me off. It has a very nice interior without being over the top about it. It's not overtly luxurious, but it is, I think, well-styled. There are some pieces of maybe hard plastic that are not quite luxury, but then it doesn't really purport to be a luxury car. And I think... I picked it up. I was at a car event, and a valet parker handed the keys back to me and was just so effusive in his praise over the Atlas. Just love this Atlas so much. And in a lot of ways, I have to agree with him. So I think next week we'll have him on the show, and he can do a car review. Plenty of cargo space. It has 20.6 cubic feet of cargo space behind the third row seats. If you fold those seats, it has 55.5 cubic feet, so that's a lot, and almost 100 cubic feet if both rows are folded, so that's a lot of interior space. And I think that's always been one of the problems with some of the import SUVs, is they're just not big enough, or they're not big enough for us burly 6-foot-tall Americans. Yeah. Okay, I'm 5'11", but... And maybe I'm shrinking, who knows, but I think I'm 5'11". It comes with a 6.5-inch touchscreen, and Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, all of that good stuff is in there, so you got to like that. And plenty of power. The engine options are a 2.0-liter turbocharged four-cylinder with 235 horsepower, or a 3.6-liter V6 with 276 horsepower. I always recommend the more horsepower because, well, I'm a car journalist, among other things. It's backed by an 8-speed automatic transmission. Front drive is standard. All-wheel drive is available. So I wouldn't say that this is a sports vehicle so much, but you can do some sporting-like driving in it. And I think just kind of all around as a vehicle that is both a nice family vehicle and you can have some driving fun with it, you really can't go wrong with the new Volkswagen Atlas.
I agree. And if you recall back, you might not. There have been many moons since then. But that was the first review I wrote for Driving Today two and a half years ago now. But I had a great time then. And I drove one last year and loved it, too, especially with, I always talk about carrying the kids around. So it was designed with that in mind. That's how they advertise it. And it absolutely lives up, fits the bill and lives up to their claims. So like you say, all around great vehicle.
Yeah, we like it a lot. And so we have two winners this time around, I guess, with German heritage in a way, although you have the Japanese heritage that we don't want to minimize in the Toyota Supra. and also the Volkswagen, you know, designed largely, I think, in Germany, but also with a lot of information and input coming from the United States, and it's built in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So excellent vehicles. And when we come back, we'll be taking your listener questions and answering them, or at least answering one of them. So stay with us for that. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad, and we're really happy you're with us. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Nerad back with you, and it is listener question time, a time we love because our listeners are very thoughtful people, give us great questions, and we'd love to hear your question and try to answer it on an upcoming show. Sending that question to editor@drivingtoday.com is the best way to get it to us, editor@drivingtoday.com. And here's, I think, a very titillating question, an interesting question for you, Chris Teague, and that is, what 2021 model are you most looking forward to driving, and why?
Ford Bronco, short answer.
Hey, that's a good one.
I think that, you know, I've been waiting, like everyone else, for a long time, been seeing the leaks, been seeing spy photos and specs, and watched the debut a little, the unveiling a couple of months ago. And it's just an exciting vehicle. You know, the Wrangler, the Jeep Wrangler has been the only show in town for a long time in that off-road, kind of dedicated off-road space. So I think Ford's going to knock it out of the park. Their videos and the specs appear to be legitimate. So that'll be my big look, or my big ask for next year. And the 2021 Supra that I just drove was my other car, so I had to mark that off the list.
Well, it's interesting, and I hope people don't think this is a plant, because it's absolutely not. But my answer to that question is also a Ford Motor Company product, but it's not the Bronco, although the Bronco is a really good answer. But to me, the number one answer is the Mustang Mach-E. I can't wait to drive that. That's probably will be among the semifinalists in the North American Car of the Year testing. So I will get a chance to drive that, I think, over the course of the next 2 or 3 weeks. And it should be fascinating. I've heard really interesting things about it. I think I'm told that it looks much better in person than it looks in the photographs, for one thing. So it's really interesting to me as an auto journalist. Here we had 40 brands to choose from, and both Chris Teague and I have chosen Ford Motor Company products as the ones we're maybe most excited about. I think that says something pretty good about Ford Motor Company, and not anything I think we would have expected to say, right? Right off the top.
Yeah, I mean, they've really hit the gas pedal on new models. You know, the F-150 gets a major overhaul for the 2021 model year, and then 2023 or so, we'll start seeing some other models coming out. So, yeah, they've really picked up the pace on their new rollouts.
Right. And, you know, their desire, I think one of their fondest desires, is to be seen more like a tech company and less like an old line, 100-year-old plus auto manufacturer, although their newest advertising campaign certainly plays up their heritage, and I think in a very real and effective way. But they're doing it with product. They're putting product out there that's, I think, going to be pretty exciting for people.
I agree.
If it's exciting for us, it's probably going to be exciting for the consumer out there. So that should be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think if I had to throw in a runner-up that's not a Ford vehicle, I'd probably say the Ram TRX. I think that would be an exciting vehicle to drive. But
yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we have answered that listener question. So that takes care of listener questions for this week. Again, if you would like to submit a listener question to us, we'd love to answer it. We'll do it on an upcoming show. You can send it to editor@drivingtoday.com. Of course, drivingtoday.com is the sister website to America on the Road. When we come back, we'll be interviewing Scott Shirley of Nissan. He is the vice president of marketing, among other things. They're talking about their new product push. So stay with us for that. We'll be talking with Scott Shirley in just a minute. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you, and thanks so much for being with us on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you again. Thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate it. We have a special guest for you. Very knowledgeable guy. Scott Shirley is the vice president and chief marketing manager and marketing ops at Nissan North America. Scott, thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate you taking time to talk to us.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Jack.
Exciting times, right? Exciting times in many ways. Exciting times, so let's start with product, because you have a very important product to Nissan that was fairly recently introduced. I think introduced and then reintroduced, given the difficulties of the situation with COVID. Let's talk about Sentra for a while. How important is that to Nissan?
Oh, it's Sentra obviously is hugely important for, you know, several reasons. One, it's one of our longest standing nameplates. I think, you know, the awareness and familiarity of the Sentra name for Nissan is quite good. And it obviously comes at a very important time for us in terms of really being one of the first of 10 all new or significantly redesigned models that we'll introduce in 20 months. So, you know, we will go from being one of the older portfolios to the newest in those 20 months. So, you know, Sentra is very important to get all of that off on the right foot. And we couldn't be, you know, the reaction, we couldn't be any more thrilled with the reaction we've gotten from, you know, obviously the automotive press, the third party, analysts within the industry, our dealer network, and certainly the customers really seem to appreciate the offering. You know, even though it came at a difficult time, I think we're pretty happy with how things have gone so far.
Yeah, you've really kind of taken the compact sedan to a different level. Certainly, that is a very, very competitive segment, and you have great cars like the Honda Civic and Toyota Corolla, as I don't have to tell you, to compete with, and probably more than a dozen others. And yet you have found a way to do it, I think, a bit differently. Talk a bit about what your philosophy was as you put this edition of the Sentra together.
Yeah, you know, you kind of hit a key word there, differently. I mean, obviously, there's these mainstream segments for the business. You know, certainly, I think most OEMs do quite a bit of comparison and benchmarking. But we deliberately said, well, what do we think? You know, how are we going to do this in a very Nissan way? What's important to us? What's important to the consumer? And that's actually the most dynamic piece these days, as sort of the technology advancing so quickly, whether it's the driver assist features, the connectivity, you know, how do you introduce it? Where do you introduce it so that you're meeting all the customer needs, you know, which today are far beyond, you know, just transportation. And you have to do it in an attractive package. So those were kind of a lot of the main priorities for us to be very Nissan about it. But also be very relevant to the customer in the changing marketplace.
Right. And some of the things you did from the exterior package to the interior, this is a good looking vehicle inside and out. It looks more expensive than it is. You've gone to some really premium interiors, you know, kind of taken a chance on that, I would say, in the upper levels of the trim, upper trim levels. Talk a bit about the philosophy. Specifically, let's talk about interior first.
Mm-hmm. Well, you may know it's earned a pretty substantial place among the world's 10 best interiors, even crossing segments. So we're quite proud of that. But that, again, was very deliberate. You know, the one thing Sentra maybe over the years, had an opportunity to improve upon is its, you know, against some of the key competitors, is its perception of its durability, reliability, those types of things. Now, obviously, a lot of times you have to earn those over time. But one of the things we also recognize, though, is you can do it with delivering an interior packaging that far exceeds expectations in terms of providing high perceived quality, high quality materials, you know, the materials you choose to use. And you said it, I mean, some of this was very much set at a class above level in terms of the benchmarking and the outcome, so that people would really feel confident in their choice and really feel confident in the integrity of the vehicle overall. And we've earned a lot of points in a very short time in terms of those perceptions.
Yeah, I mean, your highest level interior in Sentra could easily be in a compact sedan from a luxury manufacturer, for example. It's that attractive. It looks that upscale. It definitely outclasses pretty much, well, not pretty much, it definitely outclasses everything else in the segment. And as you say, that was quite deliberate, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yep, quilted leather seats in a compact sedan. I don't know, probably to your point, if it's ever been done before, it probably wasn't non-luxury.
Right, right. Another thing you've been able to decode, and some others haven't, and some key competitors haven't, is the whole infotainment thing. You do a good job of it. That can be, I talk to the J.D. Power people a lot, and obviously that can be a major dissatisfier. A lot of people are troubled by the way their infotainment system works or it, in their perception, doesn't work. And you guys have got that right. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned earlier, the technology in the industry is moving so fast, and to be honest, a lot of OEMs are talking more like tech companies than car companies, which is fine. I mean, that's kind of where the industry is. But and Nissan is no exception with things we've introduced like ProPilot Assist and Rear Door Alert and the Driver Assist features. And, you know, those things are quite phenomenal on their own. But the most successful tech companies can also deliver their functionality in a very intuitive way, right? And there have been for failures in this business, in this industry as well, where there's been tech advances, but they created quite a bit of dissatisfaction with the customer because they're difficult to use. So we have, whether it's a mobile app, whether it's the controls within the vehicle, we have specifically talked about, listen, if you're truly a tech leader, these things not only do what they're what you desire them to do, they also are very intuitive for the customer because that's why you're doing it. So we spend some time really considering that. And, you know, some people are only buying cars every 6, 8, 9 years, right? So you can't leapfrog in terms of user interface. You can't take, it has to be accessible.
Right. And people have to understand it and more so. And without going to the manual or expecting dealer personnel to explain it to them, which, you know, sadly often doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about powertrain. I mean, powertrain is seemingly less and less important. You basically alluded to that in your last comment. But, you know, you do have a new powertrain in the Sentra. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, the new 2-liter engine, I mean, the focus there was, you know, obviously there's a lot of focus on just the efficiency, right? The fuel economy and the emissions and things like that to make sure that we continue to make progress there in terms of our impact on the environment. You know, not everybody, you know, everybody I think is becoming increasingly environmentally conscious, but not everybody thinks EV is the answer. So we make good progress there in terms of our efficiencies and also then paired with continued advancement in our CVT transmissions so that we, you know, still provide, you know, an entertaining driving dynamic performance. But, you know, as you said, it's not as important as it used to be and certainly not so much in a compact sedan. But by the same token, you can't leave someone feeling that they're lacking. So we made big strides versus the previous gen in both the engine performance and the CVT performance and the handling too.
Right. Well, and continuously variable transmission CVTs had gotten somewhat of a bad reputation. Early examples, just there's nothing wrong really with the way they operated, but there was something wrong with the way they felt. I think a lot of folks would say that was the major issue. But, you know, having driven a Sentra recently with CVT, there's no issue at all.
Well, you know, I think obviously that's an area where, you know, and there's many OEMs using them. And, you know, as things progress, they're able to, you know, match it more to your point with the expected feel, right? They do the same thing as a traditional HE. You know, when it's all said and done, but there is an expectation for how should this feel. And we've done a lot of work to match, you know, that expectation. Because, you know, when we started with CVTs, you know, you would have consumers because it didn't feel the same, they felt something was wrong, but in fact, it was doing what it was intended to do. So, you know, that's again about meeting the expectations of the owner, the customer, and really with Sentra in particular, you know, Sentra in this a new version, that was very much a focus in terms of, you know, focus on the customer, which, you know, led us to really make the big interior improvements. But obviously, that powertrain has to do exactly what they expect it to do.
Right. We're talking with Scott Shirley of Nissan about Sentra and other things going on at Nissan. What is the thing in the Sentra that you, where you really think you hit it out of the park, that you really have advantages versus the competitors?
I think it's our approach to, you know, the technology in our particular case, what we call Safety Shield 360, to me is a bit of a standout, and it's the suite of six safety technologies that are often optional or even not available on the competitors in this segment. But that's about the driver as well. You know, the high beam assist, the forward emergency braking, lane departure warning, blind spot warning, rear active emergency braking, and the rear cross traffic alert. So, you know, those are things that the way they're designed, they're unobtrusive, but they certainly help keep the driver safe. You know, obviously limit even, you know, not so much personal safety or obviously personal safety, but even just, you know, the smaller fender benders, it can be quite annoying as well. So these cars provide far better driver assistance than anything we've had on the road, and it's standard on a Sentra. So, you know, over the years and years, right, when airbags first came in, they were relegated to the top trims and things like that. And those are choices that we didn't want the customer to have to make when it came to Sentra.
Yeah, and really kind of plus, a big plus, I would say. Let's talk about launching this car in the age of COVID, right? I mean, this car came up, actually did some introductory work before the pandemic really hit, at least in the scale that it hit. Just tell us your experiences with this and how you had to change things, if indeed you did.
Well, believe it or not, we do a lot of contingency planning, and we did not have that contingency planned for. So we were, I think we started shipping cars early February, and dealers were probably still getting them. And obviously some early success. But obviously, as everyone knows, by mid-March, the country was really going into lockdown. So, and we had some major media planned. We were the automotive sponsor of the NCAA basketball tournament. So, you know, obviously we had to rethink things. I think we got a lot of things exactly right in terms of what was happening in late March. You know, this wasn't going to be a couple of week thing. It wasn't going to be something we could solve with, you know, some incentive move. And there were quite a few of those in the industry, but we did not make anything significant. And really then just make sure that we were, you know, aligning our expectations through the manufacturing side with what we were seeing every day, because, you know, and then ultimately, you know, pretty much all OEMs, I guess, had to make a decision to stop producing vehicles. And then we were very cautious about restarts, because, you know, we don't want to have, a situation where we've got massive unsold stock or our dealers have massive unsold stock, and with so much uncertainty, right, that would have been a huge burden, you know, on our network and us for that matter. So we took a very cautious approach with all models, but Sentra was probably the one we talked about the most because, you know, we had so much invested up to that point. And when you launch your car, that's when you expect to start gaining your returns.
Right.
So we were very cautious and waited. And then, you know, we saw the clouds start to clear a bit in June, and the launch went forward really late June into July, and has really provided, you know, the lift, you know, that we were expecting. You know, and our dealers did a great job. You know, they were able to work, you know, they're the most creative bunch in terms of how they reacted to, you know, COVID in general. But they were also able to, you know, bottle some of the excitement around a new launch and work directly with their own owner base and kind of keep things moving. Without the, it's a big advertising launch that tends to bring in the people that we haven't maybe seen before, but they really did a good job introducing the car to their owner base and getting pretty good sales conversion even during, March and April when things were pretty tough.
Right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit about March. I mean, certainly nobody expected what happened around March 15th when sales literally went off a cliff. You know, it was like water going over Niagara Falls. It's when you see the sales chart. What was your reaction and what was Nissan's reaction? And, you know, looking back over those last several months, how do you feel you did in terms of reacting to it, reacting right, and, getting the mix right in terms of what you did incentive-wise and product mix and all of that?
Coming out of it, I think we got a lot of things right. I mean, we erred on the side of caution. We specifically looked at what happened in China. We looked at what was happening in Europe. And we felt it was best to assume maybe a little more cautious view. I mean, I think in that situation, the last thing we wanted to do is be overly optimistic that this was just going to blow over because, all right. So I am a University of Kentucky alumni and they canceled the NCAA tournament. So I knew that was a big deal because people from Kentucky tend to live for that time of year. So
yeah, many of us do, right?
Yeah. So, we were pretty cautious. And like I said, we were not over anxious to restart because really once you start your plants, you need to keep going. I think, and really, like I said earlier, I mean, the Sentra was one we wanted to make sure that we didn't add risk to because it was so much invested up to that point. It was, it was worth it to really just take a pause for a couple of months and protect all of that investment to the right time.
Right. Do you feel like you did a relaunch then? Do you think it was kind of an official relaunch in your head when you came to market again with Sentra, or was it kind of continuing?
Yeah, I mean, the from a media standpoint, absolutely. And like I said, the dealers had good success even early on, working with their own portfolio of customers. So they were really able to, obviously everybody lost momentum when the TIV dropped 50% year on year in April, but
right.
They were able to keep Sentra going, better than, quite well, better than most programs, I guess, because we had a lot of energy behind it as we headed into March. And I think they understood quite well that this was maybe their best tool to sort of keep some wind in the sails, despite the external challenges.
Well, certainly we've heard a lot about how this is an SUV market, how sedans are passe, and yet this is a very important sedan. Tell us why it's important. Tell our listeners about the size of that market still and how important that market is.
Yeah, it's still the top three or four segment in the U.S., at least the way we slice it. And I think if you were to take the size of this segment and put it in just about any other market, you would not ignore it. So that's our view. And we also, we're trying to look into the crystal ball and look into the future. And, there's some interesting signs that the next generation of vehicle purchasers aren't necessarily going to want to be riding around in the same vehicle they grew up in. And we've seen this happen before. Absolutely have. We don't think the end of the sedan is near. In fact, I think in the next 5-6 years there'll be clear signs that it's coming back. So the Sentra will be around throughout that time period, and so it needs to be obviously keyed into what the consumer expectations are going to be today and in the future. Again, I know some have looked at the landscape and said, maybe they just have other priorities. But for us, this is still one of the top priorities.
Right, right. And you've alluded to the fact that you are essentially turning over virtually everything in the portfolio. Let our listeners know what they can expect to see next out of Nissan.
Well, in just a very short time, there's an all-new Rogue. They'll hopefully be probably within the next couple of months. So we'll be seeing those on the road. And that's obviously for Nissan huge. because it is our top seller. And I think it has really, it's the Sentra playbook to a large extent in terms of where the focus was, in terms of the customer focused philosophy. A little different in that this is much more of a family hub, the Rogue, because, you know, Sentra probably tends to have a little more time just with the driver in the car, but Rogue, there's other people in the car. So we call it the family hub, and things like, you know, wireless Apple CarPlay, wireless smartphone charging, Wi-Fi hotspots, you know, to provide creature comforts for people other than just the driver. But again, it replicates the Safety Shield 360 we talked about in terms of, you know, keeping all of the occupants more safe. And then a new thing for us, the first application of ProPilot Assist with NaviLink. ProPilot Assist is obviously our, it's the cruise control, lane centering, stop start. But with the NaviLink, that adds even more precision to how the system works in terms of keeping it centered in its lane. And obviously the Rogue, not a lot of people maybe have seen it yet, but much more muscular, modern design than what we have today. So that one is big. And then further down the road, there are a few more launches next year. There's some news next week that we will discuss with regard to Z prototype. And obviously we revealed July in Japan, the Aria, the crossover EV, which is just the state of the art in terms of what Nissan is capable of in a vehicle itself, let alone the EV aspect of it. So there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, a lot more exciting stuff. Before I let you go, I want to talk a little bit about your success in JD Power rankings, because maybe it's a little under the radar, but it certainly struck me as, wow, Nissan's really doing a job here. Tell our listeners what that means to you and how that came about.
Yeah, I think what is most satisfying about it is that the appeal study, I presume, is what where it's owners rating their satisfaction with their vehicle choice. And I mean, you really can't get any more definitive than that. Are you, what do you think of the car you chose to purchase in terms of performance and styling and quality and all of these things? There's many measures out there, but that has to be, one of the more substantial ones, because it's the owner saying, geez, how good do I feel about the decision I made? And what the feedback is, wow, those Nissan owners tend to feel better than most about the decision they made in their vehicle choice.
Yeah, it really does say something. Well, Scott Shirley, thanks so much for being with us, the Vice President of Nissan North America. We appreciate you being with us.
No, thank you, Jack.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Scott Shirley, who is the Vice President of Nissan North America. Thanks so much to him for revealing to us all Nissan's plans. I guess he didn't reveal all of them, but many. And they have a lot of cool stuff upcoming. So our thanks to him. And as always, our thanks to co-host Chris Teague, our mainstay of the show. Thanks so much for being with us, Chris. We so much appreciate it.
I appreciate having the opportunity to be here, and I appreciate everybody listening. I will say that if you liked what you heard, you like listening to our banter and getting the news from us, hit subscribe and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. That will help us to continue to grow and keep reaching more people as we go along.
And we love to reach more people. We love to help them out because that's what we do. And really, that's what my book is about. I think I've talked about it. Well, I know I have talked about it on the show before. It is called The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. And really, it's about how one might treat people and just to get the best results, both for them and for you. So look for that. It's available at Amazon and on Apple Books and all over the place, Barnes & Noble. Please look for The GR Factor. So that's our show for this week, and please join us again next time right here for America on the Road from Driving Today. I'm Jack Nierad.